Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nida Daf Nun Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 9 lines from the top of Daf Nun Ches. We continue with explaining points in the Mishnah regarding blood that a woman experiences found on different parts of her body. Do we assume it's menstrual blood or something else? So the Mishnah had mentioned al akeva the al rosh gudla tamea. If she finds blood on her heel or on her thumb of the foot, a foot thumb, or we call the big toe, that will be considered blood of nida, and she'll be tamea. The Gemara opens up with a question that lasts a number of lines. You'll notice the long question marking use, the shin that's encircled the she'ela, that has a vertical dashed line following, indicating the length of the question. The Gemara asks, Bishlamo akeva, I understand the heel of the woman, Ovid dinoga ba'oisoi moko. It can happen that it touches that part of the woman from which the blood comes forth, the nida blood. Elo, rosh gudlo ma'itaimo, but the big toe, how does the big toe have any connection with that part of the woman's body where the blood comes from? Why should she be considered tamea? V'chi temo zimnin dinoga ba'keva. You might say that sometimes the big toe touches the heel, touches her heel, so that the heel, which we said is a place that may come into contact, let's say she crouches or folds her feet under her body, so in such a case the heel might come into contact with that part of her body. So then the big toe may have touched the heel that had blood on it. So to this we ask a question, Umi machzikinon tuma mimokom lemokom? This is a concept that the Gemara will debate here, and you can see we use a triangle to indicate the question, but later there will be an inverted triangle indicating the question in the opposite direction. So here we're asking, do we assume that there is transfer of tumah from one place to another? As we just said, as we just suggested, that the big toe would have come into contact with the heel that originally had contact with that part of the woman where the tumah comes from. But we don't machzik tumah mimokom lemokom v'hotanya. Hoysa lo mako b'tzavara, mokom shetucha litlois toila. If a woman had an injury, let's say, on her neck, this is something that, let's say she had some type of bruise on her neck. Rashi explains, Bitsavora, im nimso dam keneged turfa, yechoylo litlos bemako al tzavora. If, let's say, she found some blood on her body, on the lower part of her body, opposite the area from which menstrual blood ordinarily flows, she could explain the presence of that blood on the lower part of her body from an injury she may have on her neck. Shepomim shemata es tzavara lufanel. Sometimes she bends over, and the injury on her neck that sheds blood, that yields blood, v'nofel dam hamako al tachtis chaluka, and the neck injury, which sheds some blood, would drip onto the bottom part of her garment, so that the presence of blood on the lower part of her garment could in fact have come from her neck. So that's what the Tanaic source says, that if it's positioned in such a way that it's under, if she bends over, the blood would hit the lower part of her garment, she can explain away the blood for as having come from her neck. Al ksefa, let's say she has an injury on her shoulder. She'eino yicholu litlos. Now, from the shoulder, it's very unlikely that blood would go from her shoulder onto the lower part of her garment. So you can't ascribe the blood on the lower part of her chaluk for garment to some shoulder injury. So eino toila. So she can't ascribe the blood to the shoulder, and therefore she will be tamea. The ein omrim, we do not say shema biyodanut losoi, maybe, we don't say the following, that she may have touched her bleeding shoulder, vehevi oso lisham, and then touched the bottom part of her garment, and the blood that is on the bottom part of her garment was transferred through her hand. So what do we see from here? That ein machzikin tuma mimokom lemokom. The question, therefore, is, why is the blood on her big toe a sign of tumah? At this point, the only explanation is that the big toe had touched her heel. But we say, ein machzikin tumah mimokom lemokom. So the Gemara explains, ela shiny rosh gudla, the big toe is different, devahadi deposa ovid demisrami. In fact, the blood can land directly from that part of her body that yields the menstrual blow directly onto her big toe. As she is walking, as she takes her paces, the big toe, as her foot is in movement, can actually be positioned under that part of her body so that the blood gets onto the big toe directly and we don't get involved with the problem of ein machzikin tumah mimokom lemokom. The Gemara now asks a question in the opposite direction, and that's why you see the inverted triangle. Volo machzikinon tumo mimokom lemokom. Is it so that we don't explain transfer of tumah from one point to another? V'hatanya, we have the following source: Nimseis al kishrei etzboseha tameo. If blood is found on her knuckles, so she is said to be tameah, mitnei she yodayim askonius hein, because hands are always in a state of movement. My taima, so how do we explain the tumah of the woman based on blood that's found on her knuckles? Lav mishum, is it not because the amrinan bodga b'chad yoda, that she used one hand for checking herself to see whether or not she had a blood flow? And in fact, she did. Venoga beidoch yoda, and with the one hand that had the blood on it, she touched her other hand, the back of her hand, where the knuckles are. And we see that the presence of the blood on her knuckles, we're assuming it came through this method of transferal of tumah. The Gemara says, "Lo, that's not what we are saying. Shiny yoda." The hand is different, the kula avida denoga. Since the hand is always in a state of movement, when she puts her hand into that part of her anatomy where the menstrual blood comes, the blood got directly onto her knuckles without some type of intermediary that brought it there. Al shoiko val parso iseho mi bifnim v'chulei. The Mishnah mentioned that if there is blood on the on her shok, the lower part of her leg, and which is sometimes called the calf, and the foot. So the Mishnah said, "Mi bifnim tameya, mi bachutz tahora. Ve'al hatzdodin mikan u'mikan tahora." So the Gemara continues. Mibifnim ad hecha. When we say that blood found mibifnim, until what point is called mibifnim? Before we go on any further in the Gemara, the term mibifnim itself means that part of her leg that when she puts her legs together, so they are covered one by the other. That's called Mibifnim. So up to what point does Mibifnim go? You'll notice, marking-wise, we have double underlined the expression Amri Debei Rebiana. You see one here, and a few lines later, there's a squiggle underline Masni Lo Behedyo, and again Amri Debei Rabiana. There are two versions in how Amri Debei Rabiana is presented in our Gemara, and we also have a little Aleph and Beis, the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating these two Lishonos, two versions. So the first version is as follows: Amri Debei Rav Yanai Ad Mokom Chevek, until the Mokom Chevek, that's called Bifnim. Now, what is meant by the Mokom Chevek? The truth is that there are a number of different explanations as to what this is. So if we look in the Rashi for his explanation, Ad Mokom Chevek, first of all he says Sofek Uchemedumali Shu Kefet Seyerech Vahashok. This has to do with the knee joint area, shikurin, and he uses this French word yairit, which is in effect the back of the knee. V'koma ad mokoim shehu maschil, until where the back of the knee begins, until that point kori pnim. V'cheveki masichas hagidim, the chevek is where the sinews are found, shechovkin hayerech v'ashok yachad, which connect the thigh to the calf. Somoch la'oso kefetz. That's where the mokom chevek is. So that we have so far described the bifnim is the area between the legs. And ad mokom chevek, there's, by the way, another pshat, and it's found in Tosfos. He says that the chevek is the place where the calf, if let's say a person were to bend their knee, bend their foot back in such a way that their thigh and their calf are touching one another, that's the mokom chevek. So until that point is what the Gemara says would be considered bifnim. So now the Gemara goes on and asks, Ibayaloho mokom chevek kilifnim o kilichutz. What about the mokom chevek itself? Is it viewed as bifnim, and blood found at the mokom chevek would be tomei or kilachutz? Or is it considered outside the problematic area, and hence she would not be tomei? Toshma, the Toni Rav Katino. Rav Katino has the following teaching. Ad mokom chevek, the chevek atzmo kilifnim. So this would answer the question that the mokom chevek itself, either like Rashi says, the place where the sinews connecting the thigh with the calf are found, or as we saw in the Tosis, the pshat where the when the leg is folded, that area would be called penim. Now we have a second version, Rav Chiya Braid Rav Avyo Masni Lo Behedya. Up till now, the Amri de Rav Yanai was coming to explain our Mishnah. Here we have the Amri de Rav Yanai teaching it disconnected from the Mishnah, but straight out, Amri de Rav Yanai Ad Mokom Chevek VeChevek Atzmo Kilifnim. Boy Rabbi Yirmiya. Rabbi Yirmiya asks a question. What about blood found on her leg, within the following different shapes? Kashir Mahu. Kashir would be a circular spot of blood, circular with a circular in the fashion of a bracelet, in that fashion. Kashura Mahu. Tosfos explains Kashura means a row of blood droplets. Tipin Tipin Mahu. Tosfos explains that this is droplets of blood that are not in any fixed pattern. L'roichav yirecho mahu, a stripe of blood going across the width of her foot, as opposed to blood that drips forth from her in a vertical fashion. Here the question is, what about a strip of blood found on her leg, in the width of her leg? Toshma, so we have the following Tanaic source, al bisra sofek tomei sofek tor tomei. If blood is found on the woman's flesh and you don't know where it came from, so we say she's Tamea. Now in this source it said Al Bisra. my love, ki hai gavno. What does al bisra mean? Is it not in this fashion? Loi, dilma de ovid kiritsua. When this source says it's found al bisra, and we don't know where it comes from, it's not necessary in one of the forms we just mentioned, but rather kiritsua. That's a stripe of blood, very likely in a vertical fashion, which is the normal way for it to appear. So as far as Rav Yirmiyahu's question, it remains unresolved. Hahi itza dishtakach lo doma b'mashtisa. There was a woman who was involved in the weaving process, and she noticed blood on a certain mashtisa as a part of the loom. The loom being used in weaving garments, weaving materials. So she found on the mashtisa, which is a particular part of the loom, she found blood. Asoy lekamid Rav Yanai. She came to Rav Yanai with this question: is it a sign of my being anida? Or my law, tezel v'tesi. So Rav Yanai says, go and repeat the way you were operating the loom, and see if, as there's this back and forth movement, whether or not this part of the loom ends up at a certain point between your legs, which would then be grounds for saying that she would be Tamea. So Rav Yanai is saying, repeat your action to see and to come to a conclusion. The Gemara asks, V'hotanya ein shoinin b'taros. When it comes to issues of taros, we don't repeat things to come to conclusions. The Gemara answers, ki amrinon ein shonin. Under what circumstances do we say that? Lekula, if the result or our goal is to be lenient. Aval l'chumra, where the goal is that through the repeat we're going to end up being strict. So shonin, we will repeat to see whether or not we should impose a stringency. Now, to explain this more, a little more in greater detail and clarity, we will look at the Rashi. The Rav Yanai had said to operate the loom with a continued back and forth motion as she would, and see whether it ends up between her legs. The Gemara then asks, but with regard to Taros, we don't repeat movements in order to see where we stand. So let's look at Rashi v'hotanya ein shonin b'taros gabi misate v'taliso. This Tanaic source that's an ein shonin b'taros is in the context of someone that's wrapping himself in a talis, a broad garment, v'taros etmeis b'sido, and there is food that needs to remain tohor, and things that are mitame, things like asherets that are next to him. The perikama, as is mentioned in the first perik, sofek noga, sofek lo noga. It's a question, it's a doubt in our mind if while he was, let us say, cloaking himself in the talus, he was swirling it over his head in order to put it on his body, maybe the talus came into contact with some tuma that was off to his side, and then having become tame because of contact with the tuma, it then touched the food, and thereby making the food tame. So I don't know whether it touched the tuma or not. So the first opinion is tohor, v'im ef shon kenoga tame. If, however, it's a very tight location where it's impossible otherwise, that impossible that the talus was swirled over his head without touching both the tuma and the food, so then we will rule it to be tame. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, afapi delo efsher, lo mitaminon lay. Even if it was, let's say, a very tight situation, we won't automatically be mitame, ela onrim lo, rather, we tell the person, Shane means do it again. Let's see how the talus is wrapped around your body. How do you put it on? The e lo noga, and if in this repeat test, we find that the talis doesn't touch the shrutzim, so mitarinon le, we will declare the food to be tohor. Omlulo ein shonim mitara. So the rabbi said to Rav Shimon Liel, no, we don't repeat things. The af agav the hashto lo misrami, dumei ukara lo havehochi. That even though your test now shows that it didn't touch, who says that beforehand it didn't touch? And since the circumstances are that it's a tight location, we're going to be mitame. In other words, we're not going to repeat in order to come to a conclusion of leniency. So, and that's in fact what the Gemara said when the question was raised, how can Rav Yanai say, do it again to the woman when we see we don't do things again? So the Gemara answers, and we continue in the Rashi, ki amrinon ein shoinin l'kula. If the repeat is going to lead us to a point of leniency, then we say we're not going to do it again. Kegon bahi, like in the case we just had with the talis. Di'ef shalom kenoga v'tame. We said that we're dealing with a very tight, squalid location, and at first glance it appears that it's impossible for the talis to have been put on without touching the sherets and the taharos, thereby commuting tumut to them. So should we come along the anan neku v'neimo le shanei lokel? Should we then tell the guy, try it again, do it again, in order for us to come to a conclusion of leniency? So we don't say that. Aval hocha, but in the case of the woman and the blood and the weaving and the loom, chumra hu, we're going to be going in the direction of a stringency. The mistama tahora, most likely the woman is tahora. Taha lo al bisra v'lo al chaluka ishtakach. She didn't find blood on her flesh nor on her garment. Hi, domar tezel v'tesi, and that which Rav Yanai is saying, do it again, do the weaving movement process again. V'imisrami metamina lo chumrohi. And if it turns out that part of the loom, when being operated, does end up between her legs, so we will end up being mitama her. So that is a stringency. And with regard to a repeat, to establish a stringency, we will do a repeat test. The Gemara continues, Hoysa Poshtasoi. The Mishnah mentioned a situation of a woman taking off her garment and sleeping under it in the course of the night, and the Mishnah said that at any point of the garment where blood is found, so that will be a sign of tumah. The Mishnah had said, "Hoysa poishtosu misgasibo belaylo kol mokum shimsa bo kesem tameya." Wherever a blood stain is found on it, it's tameya. Meishu choser. Because in the course of sleeping on it at night, so it ends up, any part of the garment could have ended up under the woman. So the Gemara continues, Tanya, Omar, Reb Elozer, Reb Yossi, Dovar zeh, hoyreisi b'iroimi, l'isur. The case of the Mishnah of the woman who had taken off her garment and used it as a type of sheet or covering for herself, so he ruled like that, that blood found on any part of it will be a sign of her being tamea. Ukshibasi etzo chachomim shibadorum omruli yofeho reisa. And when I came to the scholars in the south, says Rabbi Elazar ben Yossi, they said that your ruling was a positive ruling. Tana Rabbanan, we have another source, and the topic heading for this piece of Gemara on the side we have written. That which we, in fact, will find in the source, Aruka Shalov Shel Chaluka Shel Ktsara, a tall woman that wore the garment of a short woman, Oy Hahefech, or the short woman wore a garment belonging to a tall woman, be much longer, Venimtsa Aleha Dam, and we find on the garment some blood. So the Tanaic source begins here, Aruka Shalov Shel Chaluka Shel Ktsara, a tall woman who wore the choluk, the garment of a short woman, uksara shelav shechaluka shelaruka, or a short woman who wore the garment of a tall woman, im magia keneged beis turfa shel aruka shtehen tameos. If the garment has enough as a dimension to it, that the that it would reach the pubic area of the tall woman. So then shtehen tameos, both women will be tamea, not just the short woman but the tall woman as well. V'im lav, if however it doesn't have sufficient length in it for it to reach the pubic area of the tall woman, so then aruka tahora uktsora tamea, the blood will assume the blood having come from the shorter woman, hence the aruka, the tall woman, will be tahora. Tanya idach. Now another Tanaic source, Bodko Chaluka, Veshilasu Lechaver, the woman checked out her garment and it was, as far as she was concerned, blood free, then loaned it to her friend, and she gets it back and finds blood on it. He tahora v'chaverta toilaba. So the owner of the garment will be tahora, and the friend who borrowed it will herself be able to ascribe the stain to her friend. Omer of Sheshes, uleinyan dino tanan. This Tanaic source was not dealing with establishing a tuma status whatsoever, but rather it was dealing with who is responsible for footing the cost of the washing. The dina is money matters, and the money matter here is who has to pay for who has to shell out the laundering fee. Aval the inyan tuma, but as far as the one of these women becoming tamea, he tahora v'chaverta tamea. The first woman who had checked out the garment and then afterwards loaned it to a friend. So the first woman, the owner of it, is tahora. The second woman will be tamea. So that the source, which as it is, said the original woman is tahora and the chaverta toilaba, and the second woman, the one who borrowed it, can ascribe the stain to the owner, is basically saying that we can't impose on the woman who borrowed the garment the obligation of paying for the laundering costs. But as far as Tuma is concerned, it is clear to Rav Sheshes that the original woman is tahora and the one who borrowed it is tamea. The Gemara asks at the top of Amud Beis, "My shna meha desanya." What is different about this case that we just learned, as opposed to the following source? Shtei noshim she nisasku betzipor echod. There were two women who were dealing with a bird. And it's a small bird, the ain bo elo kesel adam. And they were, let's say they slaughtered the bird, or they were cleaning the bird. There were two women operating, so to speak, on one bird. And how much blood is in the bird? The ain bo elo kesel adam. And the bud, it's a small creature, so it has only, sell as a certain coin, and it has a known size to it. So the bird has only that amount of blood in it. The nimsa kesela al zu u kesela al zu, and a sela amount of blood is found on the garments of each one of the women. Shtehen tameos, and the source rules that both women are tameos, and we don't ascribe the blood of one of them to the bird's blood. So what do we see from here? We're not toila. Let us glance at the Rashi on the second, third line from the top. Sela, let's go to the Rashi at the top, the very top. Shtehen tameos velo talinon echad min aksamim betzipor. We don't ascribe one of the stains to the bird. The afagav the ika limitly, even though there is grounds for ascribing one of the stains to the bird, so that even though there is an opportunity to ascribe, we don't ascribe. V'hachinami, so too in the case of the two women, then the garment that was loaned from one to the other. Afagav debodka, even though the owner checked it out, lema shtein tameos. Let us say that both women are tameos, the emur lav yofa bodka, on the grounds that the first woman didn't check it out thoroughly. So that's the question. Why in the case of the woman who loaned out her garment to the other one, we say toilin. And here, in the case of the two women dealing with the bird, we're not toilin. The Gemara answers, shiny hasam. The case of the two women with the extra sela of blood is the eko selia ser. There's an extra sela quantity of blood in that story. So as a result of the extra sela, Rashi says, umay choses de tolis le leselia sera de tmea behach, talio behach. Which woman are we going to ascribe the extra sela of blood to? Why would you choose any one lady over the other? Well, since there's no reason for choosing one lady over the other, shtei hen tameis. Rashi goes on, aval hocha tuma tluya b'hach d'labodka. But here, in the case of the garment and the stain found after the second woman had borrowed it, there is grounds for saying that the first one should be tahora, in so far as that she had checked it out before she loaned it to her friend. So since there's grounds for establishing tahara, we do so. In the case of the extra sela of dam in the bird story, there isn't any one woman we should choose over the other. So therefore, both are tameos. Tana Rabbanan, lavsha shloisha chalukos habadukin la. Woman wore three levels of garments, one on top of the other, one level above the other, and they were checked out before she wore them, checked to be blood free. Im yichola litlos toila, if there's grounds or a basis for explaining away the blood as something other than menstrual, we'll do that. The afilu betachton, and will this explanation will use even for the lowest level of garment, the one closest to her body. Ein yichola litlos, if there is no grounds for being toila, so ein a toila the afilu be'elyon, we won't be toila even with regard to the outermost garment, which is the most susceptible to getting stained from some outside source, but we won't do that. Kesad, an example of what we're learning, an example of being toila. Avra b'shuk shel tabochem toila afilu b'tachton. If the woman had passed through a butcher's market and there's blood that spurts in such a place, she will be able to explain away a bloodstain found on even her lowermost garment as having come from the butcher's, and hence she'll be tahora. Lo avra b'shuk shel tabochim, if she never went through a butcher's market, so then af be'elyon eina toila, then even on the outermost garment we will not be toila, and she will be considered tamea. So once again, if she has a basis for explaining away the blood as being something other than menstrual blood, we'll use that explanation or that excuse, even if it is with regard to the lowermost garment, the least likely to get to be splurted with blood. But nevertheless, when we're toilet, we go all the way. The Mishnah. The topic heading that we have assigned to this piece of Gemara under our No Say heading is Toile Hadam Bedover Acher, the ability to ascribe the discovery of blood to something else other than her own Nida blood. The Mishnah, V'toile B'chol Dover Shi Yichol Litlos, a woman can explain away the presence of the blood or the stain based on anything she can. Examples: shochta behemo chayv oaf. If she slaughtered an animal or a bird, nisaska biksomim, or she was dealing with other stains, oy she yoshva bitzad ha asukin bohen, or she was sitting next to someone who was involved with those things, so that these could have been responsible for staining her garment. Horga ma'achilas, or she killed a ma'achilas, a type of bug. Harei zu toilabo, she can explain the blood stain on her garment based on these things. Ad kama toil, in the case of her killing a ma'achilas, up to what size blood stain could she say is from the bug? Rabbi Chanina ben Atugnis Omer, ad kigris shel pool, until the size of a grease, a type of bean. Ve'af alpi shelohorga. Rav Chanina goes further than the Tanakam and says she can be toile even if she didn't actually kill the bug. Tanakama says that she can be toile, she can ascribe the blood stain only if she actually killed the bug. But in the case of Rabbi Chanina, even if she didn't actually kill. Ve'toile bevno bebaila, let's say her son or her husband had an injury, and the injury oozed out of the injury was blood. Im yesh ba maka v'hi yechola hi gola, if she had some type of bruise that could start bleeding, ula hoitzi dam, and to shed forth blood. Im harezu toila, she can ascribe the stain that she has onto any of these things. Ma'isa bisha'achas shebosof ne Rabbi Akiva, a woman came once to Rabbi Akiva, Omra lo, ro'isi kesem, I noticed a stain. Omra lo, shema maka ho'isavach, maybe you have an injury. Maybe you have a bruise. Omra lo, hein. V'chosi, yes, I had a bruise, but it healed. Omar lo, shema yecholu ligola lotzidam. Maybe the bruise could start bleeding again. Omra lo, hein. Yes, it's that kind of situation where it maybe it formed a scab or something, but if pressure applied, it would start to bleed. And she said, yes, that's my condition. V'toa Rabbi Kiva, and Rabbi Kiva declared her to be Torah, namely that the stain she discovered on her garment was from that bruise that healed, but had the potential of bleeding again. Ro Talmidov, Mistaklin Zembozeh, Rabbi Kiva noticed his students looking with funny looks at one another, indicating, we'll say, looks of skepticism. Amar lo, ma hadavar kasher beinechem? Rabbi Akiva says, what's troubling you? Shelo omru chachomim hadavar lahachmir elohakel. The whole rule of ksomim is a situation where the rabbis who imposed the tumah based on a stain discovery is a rabbinic regulation that has built into it leniencies. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "V'ishal kisye zova dam ye zova b'fsara." And from the pasuk we see dam v'lo kesem. What makes a woman tamea is blood, not a stain. Eichu nosun tachas hakar v'nimsol lov dam. The eid is a piece of linen or white checking cloth that the woman found under her pillow that she had used for checking, a girl, tahar. If she discovers on this aid a blood stain that's circular, she's tahar. She's tahora. A circular blood spot wouldn't come from her having checked with it. It came from something else. Moshuch tome. If it's a stripe, then she would be tamea. Divrei Reb Elazar Rebbe Tzadok, the presence of a striped blood stain is indicative of it having come from her using the aid to check herself. Tanina laha de Tana Rabbanan. Our Mishnah serves as a basis or reflects that which is taught in the following brisa. Maisa v'tola Rebbe Meir b'kilar. There was an incident where Rebbe Meir explained a blood stain on a woman's garment based on the fact that she was in the presence of kilar, a type of red substance, so that it's not blood but rather kilar. Rebbe tola besraf shikma, and Rebbe likewise ascribed the stain, the red stain, to sraf is often understood to be sap of a shikma type of tree, which apparently had some type of blood colored hue to it.
So you have two incidents here that reflect the teaching that we learned in the Mishnah. Oy Shiyoshva, the Mishnah had mentioned that she was seated next to people who were oiskin, who were involved with handling blood. Yoshva in, lo Yoshva lo. We're inferring here that only if she knew she was in their presence, then we can ascribe the stain to that other substance, that which the other women were dealing with. However, if she didn't sit with the other women, so we don't assume a stain from another substance other than blood unless she knew she was in their presence. And we do not say, well, maybe she sat with women that were dealing with other things. So that's what is implied by our Mishnah. The Gemara points out, Tanina lahadutar rabbanan. We have a brisa whose contents is based on that which we just inferred from our Mishnah. The source says, Avra b'shuk shel tabochim. If the woman knew she had been through a butcher market area, Safek nita azalel, safek lo nita azalel toila. The only doubt being maybe the blood on her garment is from that which spurted from the butcher area, maybe not. So she has a right to be toila because she knew she was in the butcher area. Safek avra, safek lo avra. If, however, there's a doubt whether she was in the butcher area in the first place, tamea, we then won't ascribe the stain to the butcher area when she doesn't know she was there in the first place. That reflects the inference that we just drew from our Mishnah, namely, only if she sat amongst women that were dealing with other substances, only then can she be toila. Horga machoilis. The Gemara is medayik. Horga in. If she knows she killed this type of bug, later discovered a stain on her garment, so then she can ascribe the stain to the bug that she killed. Lo harga lo, but if she didn't kill, so she can't ascribe the stain to it. Masnisin money, this opinion in the Mishnah, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, that says only if she knows she killed the bug can she then ascribe the stain that she subsequently found to the bug, that is in accordance with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Our Mishnah then is in accordance with his teaching, the Sanya. Harga toila, lo harga, eina toila. If she killed the bug, she can be toila. If not, she cannot be toila. And you see, that's Reb Shimon Liel's opinion. V'chomo omrin, benkach ubenkach, toila. Even if she doesn't know she killed the bug, but she discovers a stain, a red stain, a blood stain on her garment, she can ascribe it to the bug. And obviously not from herself. All Reb Shimon Liel, lidvorai ein keitz, lidivrei chaverai ein sof. These two expressions will be explained in the source, but the gist of these expressions is, according to my approach, there's no end to how far one could be machmir, and according to my colleagues, there's no end to how far one could be mekil. And now that's explained. L'dvorai ein keitz, she'ein l'cha isha she'tahori l'bailo. You'll always have a woman who is actually tahora. She'en l'cha kol mita mita she'en ba kamo tipe da machilis. And beds, mita are beds. Every bed has blood spots on it from bugs. Bug, blood stops, blood spots. But according to me, when can a woman be toila? Only if she knows she killed a bug. But if she doesn't know she killed a bug, so she won't have the luxury of ascribing the blood stain to the bug. And yet, it's inevitable that there aren't some blood drops from bugs on all beds. So my approach leads to a type of stringency that knows no ends. And l'divrei chaverei ein sof. According to my colleagues, it's an unlimited leniency. In what sense? She'en l'cha isha she'en atahor l'bailo, a woman who is known to be tamea, she'en l'cha kol sadin v'sadin, she'en bo kama tipe dam, and the my colleagues will metahir sheets that have blood on it, even if they're large splotches of blood, more than that which you could be toila on a machilas, because the Chachamim said, even if she doesn't know she killed a bug, she can be toila. So that according to this, you'll have women that the blood stains are most likely from her. She's an Isha Sheina Torah, and yet the Chachamim will say she's Tahora. Aval Nirin Divrei Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus Midvarai Umidivrehem. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel tells us that Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus' approach is more likely than mine or my colleague's approach. Now, what did he say? Shoy Oimer Ad Kamo Hitoila. Up to what size you can ascribe blood to. Ad Kigris Shalpul. He said, up till the gris size of blood spot. If a blood spot is up to the gris in size, then you can be told beyond that, no. So you see that he caps the size of blood that we can be told about. Uludvarov anu modim. There's another girsa that you find in the Gemara, says, ukidvarov anu morim, which would mean, and according to his approach, we teach to follow in practical halacha. Before going on in the Gemara, let's go over the points mentioned by Shlomo Liel by looking at the Rashi. Rashi we find in the upper part of the narrow lines. Lidvorai ein kates. According to me, says Shlomo Liel, there's no end to how strict one could end up being. She'eini noisen shiur. I don't give a quantity in terms of blood spots. Vimlo harga, if a woman doesn't know she killed, she doesn't know whether she killed. So according to me, afilu kechardol tamea, even a blood spot that's as small as a mustard seed, a speck, she'll be tamea. And all we're talking about now is a stain, a spot found on her sheet. Uledivre chaverai ein soif, Shehen Mekilim Yesumidai. They're extremely or extraordinarily lenient. The Afilu Lohar Gotoila. Their opinion is even if she didn't kill a bug, she can still ascribe a blood stain that she finds on the bug. The Ein Noisin Shior. They don't give a quantity. El Afilu Kisela Toila. O Yoser. Even if it's larger than a Sela coin in size, or even more, she can be Toila. So there's no end to how far their point goes in the direction of leniency. The Gemara now continues after the Tanaic source, Ulur Abona Damri Toila Ad Kama. After all, we just saw in the Rashi that in looking at the Rabbona, it seems that even a large splotch of blood, you can ascribe it to some outside source. So here the Gemara says, how far do they really go? Amar Rav Nabi, Yitzhak Toila the Pishpish the Ad Keturmas. Pishpish is a type of bug. And the Gemara says that the Rabbanan will allow you to be toila until a tormus. A tormus is a type of vegetation which with a known size to it. For our purposes, it's more than a gris. But on the other hand, it's not something that's unlimited. They're saying that a woman can be toila that the blood spot that's the size of a tormus came from a pishpish, from a bug of some kind, and not from her. But their opinion, all the same, is more lenient because they're giving you up to a larger amount of blood and still assuming or ascribing it to something other than the woman. Now a little more information on the pishpesh. Tana Rabbana, pishpesh zeh or koi kerachboi. The pishpesh bug has a length equal to its width. The taimoi kerecho, and the taste of the bug is like the scent that it gives off. Bris Krusa Loi, there is literally a covenant, but it's a fact. It means here to say that there's a fact. Shekol Hamoloi Mariachbo. Anyone who squishes it, who squashes the pishpesh, will smell its scent. Will smell it. Orku Karachbo, the point mentioned here that its length equals its width. Linyan Ksumim, that has significance with regard to the issue of stains. So if you find a stain that has this characteristic that its length and width are equal, even if it's more than a gris in size, we will assume it's from the pishpesh, because that's the nature of the pishpesh. Tamoi kerechoi le'inyan truma, knowing that its taste is like its smell, has relevance to the din of truma desnan. Oishetoam tam pishpesh befiv hare ze yiflo. If a person while is eating truma, he senses the taste of this bug in his mouth, he should spit out the truma. Meno yoda. How does he know what the taste of this bug is? Answer, tamoi kerechoi. Its taste is similar to that of its smell. V'akati meno yoda. And still, one could ask, how do you know what the smell of the bug is? So, to that, the source said, bris krusolo shekol amolulo meriach bo. There is a fact or a guarantee that anyone who squishes the bug will be able to perceive its smell. Omar Vashi, ir sheyesh bo chazirim, ein choshen l'ksomim. A city that has in it pigs, one does not have to worry about the ksomim stains that a woman finds in her garment as being from nida. The reason for this is that chazirim, they eat all kinds of small creatures, and as they eat them, they squirt blood all over the place, so that a place that has swine in them that eat these shkotzim remusim, so the blood that gets on a person's garment can be assumed to be from that and not from menstruation. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, v'hai the Dukras ki'ir sheyesh bo chazirim damya. The Dukras was the name of a city. It has this din, this lenient ruling that applies to it. And you'll ask, why? Why is it like a city that has pigs in it? It doesn't have pigs in it. It's just like a city of pigs. So Rashi explains, the Dukras tabochim harbe. There were a lot of butcheries over there, v'ashposos, and garbage heaps. And shkotzim were found over there. So all of this taken into consideration would be a reason for a person seeing stains of blood on it. Now it could be that that there were also pigs in that area of Dukras, unlike that which we explained before, but since the Gemara's point here is that since there are a lot of shkutz and rosim over there, the pigs had a ready food supply of these shkutz and rosim, causing blood splattering. Ad kamo hi toile. So in the Mishnah, we saw this expression. There's a little arrow we have to the left-hand side of the Gemara, so you can see where it comes from. It goes way back into the Mishnah, where Mishnah mentioned that if she killed the Machilis, so she can be toila the bloodstain on the Machilis. And up till what size bloodstain is associated with this Machilis bug. So in the Mishnah, it said ad kegris. We continue in the Gemara. Ad kamo hi toila, regarding the dam of the Machilis. Now, you'll notice with our markings that we have a diamond repeats itself around the word kegris, and we also have a Roman numeral number 1 in the space in the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. Lower down on the page, a Roman numeral number 2. There are two lishonos, and we've indicated this on the side of our Gemara under the Nosei heading. Ad ezeshir tol machos, up to what amount or size stain do we assume is macholas related? And under the Mivneh heading, the Roman numerals 1 and 2 are featured. These are Shnei Lishonos, two versions of Machlokes, Rav Huna, Rav Chisda. In the Gemara, Rav Huna and Rav Chisda will appear to be arguing with one another. And the diamond highlights the word Kigris. And we've written Machlokes Hanal, the Machlokes before, that we mentioned in Rav Huna, Rav Chisda, Im Hadikotani, the Toila Ad Kigris, regarding the Tanaic expression of being toila ad kigris, ha'im ze koleo kigris oloi. Does that mean up till and including a gris in size? Or only up till, but not including a gris in size. If you say like the latter, up till and not including, that would mean that if a woman discovers a stain that is a gris in size, she will be tameah, because that's too large to be toila on the macholis. So now we look in the Gemara, Amar Huna, ki gris eino toila. If it's a full gris in size, so that's already too large, and she can't assume that to have come from the bug. Pachos mika gris toila, but less than a gris, she can. Rav Chista Omar ki gris Omer, Rav Chista Omar ki gris toila. Yoisu mika gris eino toila. A gris in size, you could be toila on the bug. More than a gris, you cannot. The Gemara asks, Lemo ve'ad ve'ad bichlal ko miflgi. Should we say that the machlokes Rav Huna and Rav Chista concerns how to understand the word ad? Does, when you say until, up till and including, or up till but not including? The Rav Huna sovar ad v'lo ad bichlal. Rav Huna said that you could be toila ad higris, means up till a gris, but not a gris included. So if you have a gris mamish in size, an actual gris amount, size stain, that's, the woman will be tamea. Rav Chista sovar ad v'ad bichlal. And Rav Chista would be of the opinion that up till a gris means up till and including a gris in size. So maybe that's the basis of the machlikas. Omar loch Rav Huna. Rav Huna responds, Iko ad v'ad bichlal, v'iko ad v'ad v'lo bichlal. It's not as if one has to take a firm stand. There are some times that we will say up till and including, and sometimes up till and not including. V'hochalachumra. It all depends on what your conclusion is. If as a result of saying up till and including, it results in a stringency, so we'll say up till and including. If by saying up till and including that would result in a leniency, so then we'll say up till but not including. So by saying up till and not including, I will be machmir, like is the case over here. We say up till a gris in size she can be toila. Beyond that, if it's a larger gris, we won't allow her to be toila, because by allowing her to be toila on a gris in size, that would be a leniency. Rav Chista Amar Loch, Ba'alma Eima Loch L'chumra Amrinan L'kula Lo Amrinan. Rav Chista says that in general, we pursue the stringency. Whatever leads to stringency is that which we would follow. That's in general. V'hocha K'derebi Avo. But here, and it's on this point that Rav Chista argues with Rav Huna. Rav Chista says here, we will regarding the issue of stains, we will go or base ourselves on Rabbi Avo's teaching. The Amar Rabbi Avo, Kol Shirei Chachamim Lahachmir. Sizes and dimensions and quantities that the Chachamim assign in their teachings are Lahachmir, are their purposes in order to be stringent. Chutz mi kigris shoksomim loke. With the exception of the Rabbanan's statement of a stain regarding a gris is a something she could be toilin, here and only here they want you to be lenient, so that when we say up till a gris, their intention is up till and including a gris. Iko di amri lo loho shmaitzo ba'api nafsha. There are those that teach Rav Huna and Rav Chista in isolation, namely not as commentaries on our Mishnah, but rather as follows. Rav Huna Omar b'kigris kigris kiyeser mikigris. According to Rav Huna, a stain that's the size of a gris is as if it were larger than a gris, and you cannot be toila. Rav Chista Omar kigris kipochos mikigris. If it's a gris in size, so we can treat it as if it were less, and she can be toila. Vekomiflegi ba'ad ve'ad dehocha kidamrinon. And the machlokis between Rav Huna and Rav Chista is how to understand the word ad in general. Is it up till and including, or up till and not including? So, according to Rav Huna, the Mishnah that says ad b'kigris, The Mishnah is saying up till, but not including. According to Rav Chisda, the Mishnah is saying up till and including a gris. Meisvei, the Gemara continues at the top of Nun Tes Amud Aleph. The source says, Hayu Aleha Tipei Damim Lemata V'Tipei Damim Lemala. A woman had on her some droplets of blood that were, Lemata means small, some that were large. Toilu Be'elyon Ad Kigris. She can be toila, she can ascribe the stain that she finds
up till the belia means the uppermost, the largest one, up till a gris. My love, kigris, milamata. When it says here up till a gris, it means like a, even up till and including a gris, meaning that the gris size is, milamata means is as less than a gris. It's treated as less than a gris, which means it's something she can be toila on. So that we see, like, this approach would be a kasha than a Rav Huna. No, that's not the way to learn it. Rather, kigris milamala.
The gris is size, stain, would be viewed as if it were larger than a gris, and it's something that you would not be able to be toilan. That's like Rav Huna said. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.